up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Welcome to us on SB Nation AM. I am Tony D. Ron Culver alongside as we take you through the hour. We'll keep you up to date if there's any developments in the LeSean McCoy case. I don't know if there would be any this early. It was certainly a perplexing story that we went through in hour number one. But it just goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, you get these social media posts to see if you can accuse somebody of something. Sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. But we'll see what happens in this story of a robbery that may or may not be tied to Shady McCoy. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver had a conversation with the media yesterday talking about the state of the game. He's not happy with the competitive imbalance that people are kind of unhappy with, but he thinks he's got a good product. He thinks he's got a good league. He thinks he likes where it is going. He'd like to see a different system. I bet he would. But overall, the NBA, We did this yesterday in terms of state of the game. We talked about the NFL. The state of the NBA is very interesting because there, with the stars in the league and the way it's aligned and the entertainment value that you can get if you get an NBA season pass, let's say, and you can watch, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee, if you're not even from there, take on the Houston Rockets or wherever, whatever game you're watching, the entertainment value is certainly there. You can get good regular season games. You can watch superstars do their thing. But the system, people are just ripping their hair out over the system. When in fact the system has been created and it's all good to get a team can make their roster the best it possibly can be. And if that means DeMarcus Cousins takes $5 million to go play for a team that's already loaded with all-stars, so be it. If LeBron James wants to go be a Laker and bring certain players with him, so be it. Right? That's the way the system is. But there is one interesting development that could be coming to the league that I think is not necessarily a great thing, but it's going to make people happy, but not for the reason they keep saying is going to make them happy. And I'll explain that coming up next. I am Tony D. This is SB Nation AM alongside Ron Culver. Again, hit me up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Hit Ron up on Twitter at Ron Culver with two N's. I am Tony D. This is SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver was talking on Tuesday. He says there is growing support to change one of the rules in the NBA that would allow players to get into the league at the age of 18 again rather than at 19. Now, this created the so-called one-and-done rule in college basketball. That was the effect of this ruling. So when you had a guy like LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, a number of players going right out of high school and in the NBA, David Stern at the time thought, all right, wait a minute, there needs to be some sort of like acclimation process. You know, maybe there's a maturity level. So we're going to raise the age of entrance to 19. That doesn't mean you have to play college basketball. You just have to be 1 year removed from high school. And so what did those guys do? Instead of going playing internationally for a year somewhere, they all went to the college game, did their 1 year of work, and then went off. John Calipari has made a whole recruiting angle on this at Kentucky, right? If you're going to play college basketball, you might as well play for me. If you're just going to stay 1 year, I'll make your life better by teaching you what you need to learn, improve something in your game to get you to that next level. So this is going to be heralded by a lot of people because there was something about the college basketball game that was missing. There was something about the college basketball game that didn't feel right when you had all these guys just borrowing time playing on college campuses, going to get a quote-unquote education when in reality they were playing college basketball. But here's where I find the most disingenuous argument that I've heard from people over the years with this one-and-done rule. Because I get this all the time, because we'll have this conversation and people will say, you know, I just think these kids ought to stay in college and get themselves an education. And I'll say, really? And they'll say, yeah, it's just unbelievable that, you know, these kids go to school for 1 year. They should be going to school for longer, get an education in case their careers don't work, MBA careers don't work out. I think most of this is disingenuous. Now, some people, they really do care about the education of these kids. But for the most part, that's not why you wanted the one and done rule to go away. You didn't want the one and done rule to go away so that kids could get an education and stay in college. You wanted the one-and-done rule to go away so it made college basketball better. So that the people that weren't going to use the college system to get to the NBA, you know, just borrow it, you know, getting there for a year, that the people who would be in college would be people that were likely to stay 2 to 3, if not 4 years, to develop their ability to play at the next level, or not at all. That's what it all boiled down to. You wanted college basketball the way you remembered it. It has nothing to do with getting the kids' education, because you never care about the kids who leave college to go support the family business, or leave college because it wasn't for them and they'd rather go to a trade school and have a profession in that field. You never worry about those people. You always worry about the basketball player that's leaving your institution earlier than you want him to. You'd rather not have him at all than have him for 1 year and have your roster filled with people that will be there time and time again. I get it, because that's the way that's the college basketball that I remembered. Right? When I was going to college, I didn't like Duke. Right? I like them now, but back then I just didn't like Duke. And I watched Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley, and I kept thinking to myself, my God, I'm going to have to deal with watching these guys for 4 years going to Final Fours. You don't do that today. Right, you get a player in the league that's excellent. If he's on your rival's team and he's driving you insane, you're only going to put up with him for a year, if not two, and that's it. So this one and done rule, I think it's good. I think it's good for the game, because I never agreed with the idea that at the age of 18 you can't make it in the NBA. You can make it in the NBA, manage your money, manage your time, manage the expectations if you have good people around you, and that's not really the NBA's responsibility to put good people around you. Right? Yeah, it stinks when a kid is drafted like Kwame Brown and he ends up being lost in the system and he's the number one pick and he doesn't handle the expectations correctly. But LeBron James would have wasted his time in college, and we know that. Right? There's a lot of players who would have wasted their time in college. There were a lot of guys who did waste their time in college, could have gone right to the NBA. So the NBA product is going to deal with some good and bad here. There's going to be some 18-year-olds who are going to get drafted by teams who are not going to be able to handle the money and the fame and the expectations, and there's going to be 18-year-old kids who are going to handle it really well. So they're going to deal with that. But college will no longer have to contend and play this phony game with us that it is all about getting an education and these are real student athletes, while we know they're not, while we know they're just simply buying their time. I wish the NBA had a better alternative. I've been saying this for years. I think the G League, the D League, when it was first invented, right? I didn't think that was a viable option for kids who wanted to play at the NBA and could play at the NBA. That's why John Calipari was successful in loading Kentucky up with McDonald All-Americans, because John Calipari wasn't fooling anybody on his recruiting trips. He wasn't telling them all about the great academic institutions at the University of Kentucky. My brother went to Kentucky, and he got a fantastic education there. But that wasn't the selling point. The selling point was never, come to Kentucky, get yourself a degree, and then go to the NBA, but you'll have something to fall back on. His recruiting pitch was always, look, you're going to surround yourself with players just like you. I'm going to surround you with players just like you who have the ability to get to the next level. So your practices at my school, at my team, your practices are going to be better than games you would play somewhere else. Because in practice, you're going to be going up against guys who are just like you, who are going to be drafted just like you. Now, let's say you're struggling with the mid-range jump shot. Maybe something that you need to get better if you want to get to the NBA. Come to me. I'm going to get you better at that mid-range jump shot. I'm going to get you working in a team environment. But I'm also not going to ignore the things that you're going to need to get to the next level. That's why at Kentucky, one of the things that you see on a Kentucky roster, you don't see guys playing 38 minutes a night. You don't see guys playing 35 minutes a night. He's got enough talent to take those minutes and spread them across the floor. That reduces a little bit of wear and tear, but he does this. That's a really good selling point to a kid that already knows he could play in the NBA, but he just can't because of the rule. So taking this out of the equation, it's going to be interesting now how the recruiting dynamic shift. Does Calipari still make that pitch to a kid that may or may not be drafted? That's 18 that may or, you know, when he's making the early pitch, I should say, because by the time he's really making the pitch, the kid probably really knows if he's going to be a first round draft pick or not. But let's say he gets to a kid at 16 who he knows is going to play NBA basketball, but does he make the pitch that, oh, you're going to need some refinement? You may not. How does that shape up? But make no mistake, this is going to make college a little bit more consistent. It may not make it better. I don't think when you've got all of these NBA level talents in the league and you take them off the board going forward, it's not going to make it better. The basketball is going to be different. You may like it better, right? But the talent wise is not going to be better. But don't hold your breath just yet. There's growing consensus on this. It looks like it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen at least for a couple of years. There's one other thing he's got to do, and that Adam Silver's got to get it with the NBA Players Association. They got to kind of collective bargain on this and get it down. Because there's a whole way it works, right? You service into the league equals so much money, et cetera, et cetera. So they're going to have to reshape some things.
And how much money will the NCAA be losing?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean,
do we tune into the tournament, for example, for talent, or do we just tune into the tournament because of the gimmick nature of it?
If the games are college bad. Basketball for me doesn't start until March.
Right.
I feel bad for saying that, but
a lot of people feel the same way. You don't feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'll watch a game or two if there's nothing else on. You know, in the month of November, December, but I really don't get into it. I don't start trying to figure out who's the best team, who the best players are until March.
It's one of those sports where it's hard for me to get really emotionally attached to just a regular game. I root for my school, and my school has not had a really strong history of good basketball. I went to South Carolina. It doesn't have a strong history of good basketball. It went to the Final Four a year ago. If you want it, not the last Final Four, but the Final Four before. And so that was amazing. That was something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. But like my brother, as I mentioned earlier, went to Kentucky. I will talk to him after Kentucky regular season losses, like if they lose a game to LSU, and he'll be really upset about it. And I will remind him, Kentucky's going to get Kentucky's good. They're going to get a top seed in the tournament. And when you get into the tournament, I'm sorry. I'm not a big, oh my God, we got a four seed. We should be a two. You got to play. I don't think it matters. I'm not big on that.
There's so much parity.
Cry to me because you got a three seed instead of a two, or a five seed instead of a three. I mean, don't whine to me about that.
God, I'd almost hate to get a four or five seed. I'd almost rather be a six or seven at this point, because a four or five always seems to go down.
Yeah, a five always loses to a 12, right, in the tournament.
And lately it seems like a four is losing to a 13 consistently.
Now college football, I will say, like in college football, there is a level of excellence that we kind of are looking for because we have a small win. We have a small playoff, so we kind of want those teams to be as good as possible or as complete as possible. But the NCAA basketball tournament, I think because of the gimmicky nature of it, right, we don't have anything like it where we have all like 68 teams over a 3-week period and we're all filling out brackets. Even people who don't even watch the sport are filling out brackets. I think there's a gimmick nature to it that is a draw. I don't think people tune into college basketball because they're seeing elite level performances and that's what the attraction to it. I think they're watching it because there's a result they're interested in, and it is something to do with their bracket, and it's just, or there's something historic there. Right? I mean, you watched VMI, when they had their upset. UMBC had their upset over Virginia. You don't know the roster of UMBC. You don't care about what they did during regular season. There was something cool about watching that only because
it was
historic.
The mascot of UMBC.
I don't even remember what the, was it Bulldogs? I don't know.
I don't know. But I do remember, hey, they were the first.
Yeah, exactly. They were the first six, you know? And by the way, that is something I'm never a never guy, but that was something I used to say I would never see in my lifetime. I could see a 56-game hitting streak or 57-game hitting streak in baseball. I could see a guy bat 400. I could see a team actually go 19-0 and win the Super Bowl. But I used to tell people all the time, I'm never going to see a 16-1. Never. And I'm glad I was wrong on that because it was kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, so, but like I said, I couldn't tell you one player on that team.
No, I couldn't tell you.
I don't even think any of those players got drafted.
No, I can't tell you. And I can't tell you the coach's name or the mascot or anything else like that. And at the time that was going on, I had relatives in town. And we were just sitting around TV, and the TV was on. And we were just all talking, catching up and whatnot. None of us were paying attention until we realized, oh, shoot, this is actually going to happen. Like, Virginia's going to lose this game. Because they didn't just lose, like, in the final minute. They got blown out.
Yeah,
pretty badly.
I think they lost it with like 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, they hit a last second shot.
Now, do you think with Adam Silver coming out and not hinting towards, hey, the one and done rule is going to go away? I think it also has a lot to do with a lot of players now are looking at it going, you know what? I don't even have to go to college. I can just go to Europe and play for a year.
Yeah, I think there is a possibility. Listen, here's one of the things. I worked in minor league basketball 15 years ago, and while I loved the experience, I wouldn't have traded the experience because I got to meet some great people. I got to become friends with some really good people that were in basketball, and I loved it. But we used to talk about this all the time. At least upper management would talk about this, and they would say we had a minor league of basketball in the United States. It was a higher level than the CBL and CBA and all. And it was we used to say, oh, these kids, they're going to want to stay home. But I remember working with a guy who had been a scout for the Clippers, and he said to me, he said, man, let me tell you something. If you're hitting threes in Paraguay, they'll find you. You know, he's like, there's no way in the globe that you can go. Well, we won't find you if you're playing good basketball. So if you're a young man, we used to say this, oh, they'll want to stay in the United States and play for peanuts. No, they could go to Europe. They could go to South America. They could go to Australia. They could go to a place. They could go play hoops and make money. And they still will get noticed by NBA scouts because the world is a lot smaller place. I think that's an option. I think that the kid who's being recruited to go to college but can make a little money overseas, I think that's opening up a little bit more. That had always been there. But I think that the possibility of that being really come to fruition for a lot more people is there. Because I got to think, if you're a basketball player that has no interest in going to college, I think you want to get paid as soon as possible. It doesn't really matter where the checks are coming from. You just want a stable overseas organization where the checks are cashing, you'll go. And then get to the NBA however you want to get to the NBA. But yeah, that's an interesting question. 800-777-2907. I am Tony D. This is SB Nation AM.
Now, back to SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And if you want to hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver, that is two N's, R-O-N-N Culver. You can catch us both on Twitter there. So we've done three shows since we've launched this program, and each show, both shows, on Monday and Tuesday, we talked about the Thai soccer team and the rescue efforts. We kind of gave you an update on Monday and then the update on Tuesday where they were all free. And so I have to get back to this because now we're learning how they got the kids out. Thank God there are people like this in the world, man. Thank God that there are people willing to be Navy SEALs for their country, because these guys, the amount of patience, the amount of endurance, and the amount of just physical ability it took to get these kids rescued is nothing I've ever seen before. So how they got these kids out, there is a graphic on what they had to do to get each one of these soccer players out. They had two divers with each kid, all right? So diver one had his full scuba gear on, and he was also holding an oxygen tank. And he was also tethered to a 3-mile guide rope. That oxygen tank went to the mask of the soccer player who was also wearing flippers to swim underwater. He was attached to the diver via a harness, a diver ahead of him. There was also a diver behind him that was on the guide rope that was a flashlight, that had a flashlight, because it was so dark underneath. It was 2.5 miles from the mouth of the cave to where the boys were. A 0.6 mile was in the, it was actually in the water that required them to go underground. Now, I did find out yesterday how these boys got into the cave. Did you find out how they got, why they were in the cave?
No.
It was part of an initiation by the coach. The coach had them go into this cave as an initiation, and they were going to go into the cave and they were going to write their names on a wall. But as they got to the cave, they ventured deep into the cave. A monsoon had come in and basically washed out how they got in there. So now people were talking about whether or not the coach, is there a crime involved here, taking the soccer team into the cave. Some people are saying they'd like to see. Some people are saying no, because he was just doing initiation, took the boys into a cave, didn't know a monsoon was coming, didn't know it would be washed out. It's an honest mistake on his
part. Just bad luck.
Just bad luck, right?
Well, I hope whatever they were trying to be initiated into, they're accepted.
Yeah, I hope so too,
right?
I think they passed. That they were also given anti-anxiety medication to calm them down when the divers got them out. Oh, yeah, that's got to be a big one. I'm sorry, that's got to be a big one. They've been there almost, what, 2 weeks? They were there 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I got to think you got to calm them down a little bit, because you're going to be putting masks on them and oxygen tanks. You can make them swim. Yeah, but this took a really long time. God bless these guys. All right, so the boys are all in a hospital. Now listen to this. So the boys were pulled out Sunday and Monday. They're recovering in a hospital. They've been kept in a sterilized isolation unit. They're required to eat soft and plain food, and they're not allowed to watch TV. I wonder why they're not allowed to watch TV. Because they're probably on the anti-anxiety medication. But I wonder why they can't watch television.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Do you think each one of these boys is going to? I mean, there's some money here, right? We talked about this yesterday. There's money.
Oh, you know, there's a movie coming out. I give it a year.
It's got to be.
You give it a year before the movie comes out.
You got to stick a writer on this right now.
Well, I don't know if this will even happen, but I thought I read somewhere that FIFA is inviting the team to the World Cup final.
How great would that be if they can get out in time?
Yeah, if they can. But I mean, if they can't watch TV, why can't you watch a game?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to give any cut to these actual divers that actually rescued these people? Are we going to give the money to the people, these kids, because their coach lured them into a cave during a monsoon?
Now, the divers are just anonymous.
Yeah, the divers
except for
will
the
be
one
like, oh.
who, except for the one who tragically lost his life.
Oh, I know. That's the sad part of this story. Because you want so badly to say, and they all survived, and no one perished. But no, one of the divers did die en route. That is the sad part of the story.
It's amazing. The movie's going to be fantastic.
I hope so. I hope they add supernatural effects, maybe a ghost, maybe some conflict between two of the boys.
Rogue shark.
Rogue shark. That'd be kind of cool, right? A shark just floating in the water. Like, where did this come from? Like, I don't know. It's a shark. Maybe a conflict between two of the boys over a girl. I don't know. You can make all sorts of things.
They got into a fight.
They got into a fight in the cave. Somebody stole the food. Somebody ate all the food.
Or somebody took more of their share than they should have.
They didn't know what to do.
Yeah, but that's the other thing, too. I mean, they were in there, you said, like, what, it's 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
They were in there. So somebody had, food had to be supplied to them
that
time.
Yep. Now, there was a report that the coach was giving his rations to the weaker boys.
See, not all heroes wear capes, Tony.
That's right. That's amazing. Good for him.
You know, he got them stuck in there, and he was willing to die for them.
I know. I'd be like, take the food. But I'm glad they're all out. And
do you think there were any conversations about, hey, you know what? Billy over there is looking kind of weak. He might be the first one eaten.
Yeah, we'll know when the movie comes out, we'll know. There might even be a scene where they try, but somebody stops them and gives them a moral speech until the divers come. That all is on the table with the movie.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could be with us on SB Nation AM. I am Tony D. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907 if you want to get into the conversation. At O'Reilly Auto Parts, you're guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts you need. Guaranteed low prices ensure you're always getting the best deal. In fact, O'Reilly's will match any local auto parts store's prices on any like item. They have the parts you need at the prices you can be sure of at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, here's a story. I'm not going to say it makes me angry because I think it's a little hyperbole, but it does make me go, ugh. The Tampa Bay Rays have unveiled a plan for a new stadium. All right, now you may think, why would you be upset about that? That sounds like a good thing. That everyone knows Tropicana Field. If you've been in that area, it's kind of a dump, and it's not a good stadium. It's in St. Petersburg. They've been looking to try to get to Tampa. So they unveil this stadium, okay? It's going to be if it's built, it's going to be the smallest ballpark in Major League Baseball. It's going to seat about 30,000. It's got about 30,000 seats. It'll be the smallest. It's also, it's got to have a dome because it rains all the time there, especially in the summer. So it's going to have a dome, but the dome is going to be translucent. So you can see through it. It's not going to be retractable. And the pictures are cool. I'll be honest with you. The pictures are cool. Here's why it makes me go, ugh. So the Rays come out and they have this project on the table. And it's going to cost $900 million. But they've got everything. They show you the concessions, what it'll look like. It'll show you what the outside will look like, how it'll fit into Tampa, the city of Tampa. It's going to be in a place called Ybor City, how it's all going to be laid out. It's going to look great. But the one thing that they don't do in this presentation is they don't tell you how it is going to be paid for. There's no plan of financing. There's nobody stepping up and going, well, this will all be privately funded. They just make the pitch. Hopefully they'll get corporate support and hopefully they'll get backing. But in all likelihood, where do you think the funding is going to come from? Right? What they want is sell the product first and then tell you how much it costs on the backside, like any other good salesman would do. Get you excited about something. And then, by the way, it'll probably be a sales tax. Or a property tax raise or whatever. And that's how it usually works. So you hire a development team that puts together this incredible diagram, right? I mean, just beautiful pictures. Shows you how it's going to fit into the city landscape. It gets you pretty excited. Because, you know, the Tampa St. Pete area, my wife is from that area. It's so unique because it's similar to, I guess, like the Twin Cities. Is like, but there's Tampa and then there's St. Pete. There's St. Petersburg, and it's separated by water and a couple of bridges. And the people have told me this. I didn't grow up there. So I just go by what people tell me is that people in St. Petersburg will cross the bridge into Tampa to go to Lightning games and Tampa Bay Buccaneers games. But people in Tampa do not want to cross the bridge to go to St. Petersburg for Tampa Bay Rays games. So they want this stadium to be built in Tampa. Thinking that the people in St. Pete will just cross the bridge over. I don't know why the bridge is a big deal. I don't know why crossing the bridge is a big deal, but apparently it is. But this stuff bothers me because I think in 2018, we have to be wiser as a society. We have to be better citizens to sort of demand that these stadiums not be built on the backs of higher taxes and other resources. And I think they can be. It's just that they won't be. And the thing that I hate the most is when these things get dangled in front of a public and people get excited because they want the best thing for their team. And then they get told, oh, by the way, this is going to be funded through these mechanisms that is going to cost you X amount of dollars. Think about this. The people in Tampa could be on the hook. Now, probably not all of it, because they'll probably find some private funding for this $900 million stadium that seats 30,000 people. That doesn't scream to me that there's a public clamoring for Tampa Bay Rays baseball. I'm not saying they should be playing in a 70,000 seat stadium. That's silly, but $90 million, almost $1 billion for a stadium that's that small, translucent, roof and everything. But I hate it when they, I just hate it. It drives me crazy when they keep dangling these products, these stadium projects out to the public and sort of say, oh yeah, and by the way, here's how we're going to do it. By this time, we should have been like, I get it in the 70s, if you're really concerned that a team was going to leave, or you really didn't know how this stuff was, you know, funded in the first place, or it really was out of the realm of possibility that it could be privately funded. But we know better now in 2018. We get it now. It can be privately funded. You don't need to get on the piggy banks of the city council and all of that. I mean, everybody knows this. Everybody knows about the NFL's deal with Los Angeles, right? I mean, Ron, you're from Southern California. I used to yell and scream about this for 20 years, right? People would say, I would say all the time, why doesn't LA have a team? And people would say, well, you know, people in Southern California, there's so much more to do than watch NFL football. There's surfing. There's sunshine. They go biking. And I would be like, no, really? Is that really the answer? Or if you have the second market available, that's just available sitting there, could it possibly, I don't know, maybe be used for blackmail by city councils and other cities to build fun stadiums?
Of course.
Isn't that more probable?
Is that, you know, we didn't, there wasn't a stadium for anyone to move into.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you could move into the Rose Bowl, that's old and dilapidated.
I used to say that all the time. Indianapolis Colts, we got to build a new stadium. You know, Los Angeles, Jacksonville. Really, where are you going to play? The Coliseum.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. The only reason why the Rams and then the Chargers moved to L.A. was after a stadium proposal had been approved and ground had been broken, and then all of a sudden it was like, okay, now we'll move there.
By the way, did you buy into that whole Carson City project with the one with the eternal flame for Al Davis and the real lightning bolts for the Chargers? Did you buy into that stadium?
No, I thought that was going to be the biggest mistake in the world. How do you put two rival teams in the same stadium together?
No, can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, although it would have been great. It would have been great fun. I think that could have been its own reality show, just what goes on behind the scenes at that stadium.
Yeah, the design was cool.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm still a little beefed because I'm a Chargers fan. I'm still a little beefed that they left San Diego.
I am too. And you know what? One of the reasons I didn't think it was going to happen, this is my conspiracy brain working in overtime when it comes to this, because I like to try to think that I'm playing 3D chess with the NFL and the way they do it. Remember when Stan Kroenke was going to build the stadium. Where is that stadium going to be? Englewood?
Yeah.
Hollywood Park, right?
Used to be.
Yeah. Okay. So they were going to build the stadium for the Rams, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when they were building it and they said, oh, it's going to be so grand. It's going to be unbelievable. And you know what? It's going to have room for two NFL teams down the line. And I thought, oh, they get their cake and eat it too. They get to have a team in Los Angeles in the second largest market in the United States. And, oh, by the way, that they'll keep it available in case that second round of negotiations for new stadiums comes around for any NFL team willing to tell a city council that they're going to move to L.A., right? So they get their cake and eat it, too. And I said, oh, you'll never, ever see a partner in that stadium. They'll keep that vacant for 25 years. There will never be another team that will go in there because the NFL would love to have that over the heads of all the other cities in the United States. And that lasted, 10 seconds until Dean Spanos was like, oh, I'll take it. I'll move up there and occupy that space.
Yeah, they're paying rent to be in a stadium. It's not even going to be their stadium. It's like the Jets playing in Giant Stadium.
Yeah. They couldn't even negotiate a naming deal.
Right.
Back then. Giant Stadium. Can it be Giant Jet Stadium? Like big planes?
No,
not at all. Can it be Giants with a J? No, it can't.
Tell you what we'll do. We'll give you a green wall.
Can it be Giant Stadium featuring the Jets? No, it cannot. Can we get the little marquee? Can we get the... No, you cannot.
We'll have one green wall for you.
That's it. That is it.
No, we'll go back to the Rays.
Yes.
How hard will it be for them to sell the people of Tampa Bay on a new stadium? Just because of the fact that they don't go to any games anyways.
No, I can't imagine. I can't imagine they're doing that.
It's one of those places. My dad, who lives in New York, would purposely go to Montreal Expo games.
Because
they were empty. He would pay for, you know, a nosebleed seat ticket and then be able to sit right on the wall. No one's going to say anything. Because it was like, oh, no, please come down. Don't sit way up there. Come down here. And I see the same thing happening in Tampa Bay where it's empty.
It is hard. It is so hard in those cities because Tampa Bay, I mean, you go to the Tampa St. Pete area, everybody's from somewhere else.
Yeah, they're all retired citizens who have, you know, probably most of them from New York are all lifelong Yankee fans.
Yeah. My parents just retired down to Florida, and my father is a huge Giants fan. And he was telling me the story when he was visiting that he went, Giants were playing last year against Tampa Bay, against the Buccaneers. And he was like, I don't want to buy a package. I don't need all the other games. I just want this game. So they told him what day the individual tickets would go on sale. So he went immediately on that day and got his Giants tickets. And he says two things happened. One, he still gets phone calls about buying season tickets for the Buccaneers. He's like, no, I'm a Giants fan. I'm not interested in your team or your games. But two, he said, everyone in his section were Giants fans. They were all transplant New Yorkers.
Mm-hmm.
They were watching the Giants. You go to Tropicana. I've been to Tropicana Field about five or six times in my since the Rays have been there over the 20 years I've been married to my wife. We used to go to a game almost every year that we'd go visit my in-laws in the summer. And three times I went to see the Yankees, and three times the place sounded like Yankee Stadium. And one year the Rays were good. One year we went, the Rays were good, and it still sounded like Yankee Stadium.
And so that's the thing that
ultimate selling the opponent.
Well, that's the thing that confuses me too. Is just why would you want to spend it? Like if it comes up to the public, I would shoot it down every single time. There's no reason for me to want my hometown team to have a new stadium if I'm not a fan of that team.
And not only that, but look, are there places for this Major League Baseball team to relocate? I'm sure, but there isn't anybody quick that they can relocate. Don't fall into the trap of thinking you'll lose the Rays. If they really want this stadium in Ybor City, they'll find a way to build it. They'll find a way to build it. But don't,
of course,
don't,
that's
don't
when,
tag you know, the city council for this.
And what will happen is, you know, whatever, I mean, it doesn't matter what team it is, every ownership group does, is they'll stack a team, get the stadium that they need, and then go, okay, let's sell it off.
Look at the Marlins. That city will pay off that bill forever and ever and ever. That Marlins stadium?
But they had a World Series title, Tony.
Yeah, they had a World Series. They had two of them, and they immediately dismantled them the second they got them. Like, oh, that was great. Are you proud of this team? Say goodbye, because all these guys are going to be gone. Yeah, no kidding. Gosh. Now, don't get me wrong. This looks, I mean, the stadium looks very nice. I mean, it looks really pretty. And it is better than Tropicana Field.
They all do.
My wife told me that Tropicana Field actually had Tampa Bay Lightning games in it one time. And I was like, really? Wow, that must have been horrible because it's horrible for baseball. They play a bowl game in there. Do you know that?
They really?
It used to be the Beefo Brady's Bowl. They had a Final Four in there one time in 98, 99. They had a Final Four in there.
So it's very close-knit.
Yeah.
You know, good old-fashioned stadium.
I got to think that there'll be some smiles if it was imploded. It's just not a good stadium. It's kind of, they have a catwalk, dude, where the ball gets hit. And it's like a ground rule double. It's like, that's what you did when you were playing wiffle ball. Remember that? Oh, if you hit the upper window, it's an automatic home run.
Right.
Like the stadium had a catwalk across the side. If you hit that, it was like a double I don't know what the ruling was, but it was something. And you were like, okay, I guess that's what it is. You couldn't play it off the catwalk. What stadium has that? Oh, God. Good luck, Rays. All right. I am Tony D. That is Ron Culver on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Props to Richard Justice. I just retweeted a tweet he has on Alex Bregman of the Astros. Have you bought your Alex Bregman jersey yet, Ron?
That's in the mail.
Holy mackerel. Here's the tweet from Richard Justice. His last 15 games, 393 batting average. 8 home runs, 7 doubles, 16 runs, 16 RBIs, and a 471 on-base percentage. That's incredible. He had 2 home runs last night.
Yeah, he's a decent player.
A wild finish, though. Did you see at the end of the Astros game last night against the A's?
No, I missed it.
All right, so bedtime. Yeah, well, it's bedtime, right? So I didn't see it live, but Bregman was at the plate. He had hit two home runs in the game. He swung at the ball, and the ball just came off the edge of his bat. It was like a little dribbler, and it went. It started out foul, came in fair. Jonathan Lucroy of the A's picked it up and tried to tag him out, but he missed and then dropped the ball, and Bregman went to first, and then he picked up the ball, threw it to first to try to get him out at first. He overthrew or threw it wild to the first baseman, and that allowed Kyle Tucker to score, and that was the winning run of the game. I mean, I'm not kidding. The ball was a foot from the plate. It's like 2 feet maybe from the plate. It was just this little dribbler. Catcher goes up to pick it up, usually tag the batter out, but Bregman was smart enough to dodge it enough, and then Lucroy just dropped the ball as the ball's spinning away from him. Bregman goes off to first and induces a wild throw by Lucroy, and the Astros win. It's a wild finish. I don't think I've ever seen a game finish like that. The A's had taken the lead in the top of the 11th inning on a home run by Stephen Piscotty. So the Astros needed two runs to score at the bottom of the 11th. And they win their fourth in a row. But Bregman's been fantastic. So good to point out. I like Richard Justice, the best in the business. Just a reminder of, as he puts it in his tweet, it's his world and the rest of us are just visiting. I am Tony D. This is SB Nation AM alongside Ron Culver. Again, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. And with two N's, that's R-O-N-N Culver. Check us out, SB Nation AM.